The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our author event series, recorded live at the Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, the Central Library Expansion Project, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Thank you very, very much for coming. I feel so at home in this library. As you can see, I'm old enough to go back to the Dewey Decimal System. I spent my youth in libraries. I worked at the Washington Post as the researcher on the editorial page and spent my time there in libraries. I'm from Washington, D.C., and on April 25th, there's going to be a book party, and all the proceeds from my book I'm giving to the D.C. Public Library. So we in Georgetown So I really am very, very happy to be here. I love libraries, and I do believe that every great city needs a great library, and we're in Philadelphia's great library. I'm just going to spend a few minutes to tell you a little bit about this book, which you might have heard about in the last few days. And I'm going to tell you how I wrote it and why I write a book that they call unauthorized. There are authorized biographies and unauthorized biographies. And the difference is that the unauthorized biography, and I have to tell you, that word still makes me a little, I'm not exactly comfortable with it, just because it sounds like it's breaking and entering. While I really believe that it's the best way to get to the truth, the essence of an individual. As a matter of fact, I really don't understand why the word unauthorized is so scandalous. I think it would be scandalous and very, very sad if we lived in a world where we only got authorized information about our governments and corporations. I don't want to live in a world like Iran. I want unauthorized information. So I start out, and I haven't written that many biographies. In a 30-year span, I've only written about 6 or 7, and that's a pathetic record for somebody who takes 4 years to write every book. But it really takes that long to put together a life story and to do it in a fair and accurate way. In this book, I interviewed about 850 people whose lives have intersected with Oprah Winfrey. I find her to be the most powerful and influential woman on the planet. I am an admirer of hers. I salute her. And when you finish reading this book, you'll be inspired. But I think you'll also say, I get it. I really get it now. I started out reading everything there was to read on Oprah Winfrey. It took years to assemble everything. And the largest source of information in this book is Oprah herself, because I got every interview that she's ever given in the last 25 years. In the beginning of her career, she was quite open and accessible to reporters. Starting about 1994, she became less and less accessible to people, and now she does not give interviews. But this book is going to take you beyond that wonderful, warm, and engaging persona that we see on television to the person behind that. All of us have an off-camera personality and an on-camera personality. I began by interviewing Oprah's relatives, her father in Nashville, Tennessee. I went to Kosciuszko, Mississippi, which is a little town right outside of Jackson, Mississippi. It's where Oprah was born, and she was raised for the first six years of her life. I went to see the house where she was living with her grandparents and her aunts and her uncles. I went to the church where she gave her first reading at the age of 3, which tells you how precocious she was. And I wandered through the cemetery that holds the remains of many of her family. I was lucky enough to spend 3 days with her Aunt Catherine, who's really her first cousin, but the difference in ages, Aunt Catherine's 80 years old, Oprah's 56, so Oprah's always grown up embracing her as Aunt Catherine. She spent a great deal of time with me, telling me about Oprah's early years, showing me photographs, and sharing many of the photographs. She took me to the Oprah Winfrey Boys and Girls Club, which is, in Aunt Catherine's words, probably the best thing that Oprah has ever done. This Boys and Girls Club is a phenomenal building and facility that is open to the children of Kosciuszko. And Aunt Catherine says that since that Boys and Girls Club started, juvenile detention has gone down, arrests have gone down, the incidents of drug abuse have gone down, and Aunt Catherine feels that that is her niece's greatest contribution. I kind of differ. I think Oprah's greatest contribution is sharing with us some unauthorized secrets, and one of them is her sexual abuse as a child. Oprah, on television, brought that taboo subject to the public really for the first time. We'd read about it before in books, but to hear it on television was something else. And I think she unlocked the shame that so many people feel. And by sharing that secret, I think that she led an awful lot of people to recovery. Through the years that I did this book, and it seems like, it was almost 4 years, I tried to interview as many people as possible. That means going across the board of her life, interviewing family and friends, interviewing classmates from high school and college, interviewing colleagues who worked with Oprah, and I interviewed them in Nashville, Baltimore, Chicago. I also interviewed people who are very, very strong admirers of Oprah Winfrey. Phil Donahue, Gloria Steinem, Mrs. Isaac Stern, former Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, and Alice Walker, who wrote The Color Purple. And I think that the composite picture that this book presents, while unauthorized, gets as close to the essence of Oprah Winfrey that we can possibly get. I believe strongly in writing this kind of biography. I think it's very, very important. I choose only people who are alive, who are very powerful, who've had an immense influence on our lives. Otherwise, I couldn't justify working 4 years on somebody's life. I have written about Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, Elizabeth Taylor, because she was the last star of a studio system that influenced the entire 20th century. Frank Sinatra. I wrote a book about First Lady Nancy Reagan. I wrote about the British royal family and the Bush family dynasty. And when I started this book on Oprah, I thought, oh, thank you, God, I don't have to do a political book. Because I learned on the last book that we've become so politically divided in this country that if you write about a Republican, only Democrats buy it. If you write about a Democrat, only Republicans buy it. And I thought, after all this time, I don't want to just sell to blue states or red states. And Oprah had never taken a political stand when I started this book. So I thought, oh, this is great. Well, then she took her political stand. So this book, towards the end, goes into Oprah's politics, and they're interesting. But the evolution of Oprah is absolutely fascinating. She started as a TV talk show host. And by the way, I met her when she was co-anchoring in Baltimore in 1981. Met her very, very briefly. And I've watched her through the years, but I had no idea in 1981 that I would be writing this kind of book about Oprah Winfrey, who would become unquestionably the most powerful and influential woman in the planet. I just saw somebody in the back go, wrap it up, wrap it up. I would love to take your questions, if you have any, and answer them as in the most unauthorized fashion that I can. So if you have questions, please let me know.
Okay, I think you all know the way this works. So if you have a question, raise your hand. We'll get the mic to you right there, to your left, Pat.
Just stand up, please.
Andy, can I take your microphone?
Yeah, do you
want to
write?
So I can walk.
Ms. Kelly, it seems that most of the talk shows and TV hosts are boycotting you. They don't want to have you appear on their programs. What's your reaction to that? You think you're being censored? You think this is fair?
Is this? Speak right into it. Can you hear me? The question was about shows that have boycotted me and didn't want to bring the book on. Am I being censored? I don't think so. I really think that the boycott's been a little bit overblown. I think it was a little bit of celebrity solidarity with Barbara Walters and Larry King and people like that. I'm disappointed not to go on their shows, but there were a lot of other media, and God bless the Internet, that's been very, very helpful. So, no, I don't feel boycotted.
Another question? Right here in front.
Given Oprah's entrance into the world of politics, what's your forecast in terms of her continued involvement, or is this a one-time event?
Did you all hear the question? Given Oprah's involvement in world politics, do I think that this endorsement, that's what you meant, is a one-time event, or will she be getting more involved? Oprah has said herself that she feels that politicians should envy her because she's got a podium, and she comes to us 5 days a week, an hour a day, 52 weeks a year. We see and hear more from Oprah Winfrey than we probably do our relatives. But for her politics, she avoided it for a very, very long time. But in the year 2000, she decided to have Al Gore on her show and George Bush, George W. Bush. She didn't endorse either one of them. But polls show that George W. Bush did so well on the Oprah Winfrey show that he came up 10 points. Now, when I interviewed Senator Robert Dole, who ran against Bill Clinton for president, he wanted to go on the Oprah Winfrey show, and she wouldn't have him. Later, he wrote a memoir, which he thought would be very, very appealing to Oprah's viewers, and she wouldn't book him. And he said that the reason was because he was Republican. And I said, well, Senator Dole, do you think that's really the reason? And he said, yes, he thought so. Then after the endorsement of Barack Obama, he left a message for me saying, see, I told you. Oprah a few years before she endorsed Barack Obama, she had asked Hillary Clinton, who was then First Lady, to introduce her at an awards dinner. And she raised Mrs. Clinton's hand and she said, "I hope you'll do us the pleasure and give us the privilege of running for president someday." So I think it was quite startling to some of the Clinton supporters when Oprah came out for Barack Obama. Now, I think that the Obama White House would give Oprah just about anything she wanted, and I know that she does not want an ambassadorship, you know, that would have her leave the mothership and go into an embassy someplace. But I think, you know, if the president asked her to host a delegation, I of course she'd do that. And I wouldn't be surprised at the end of this Obama term if we see for the first time that the Kennedy Center Awards is presented to a talk show host. I wouldn't be surprised.
And let's continue.
Annie, yes.
Ms. Kelly, I was just wondering, while you were doing your book research, what did you uncover about Oprah that was the most surprising or exciting fact?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the last part.
I just wanted to know, while you were doing your book research, what fact did you uncover about Oprah that you found to be the most surprising?
The thing that knocked me off my... Oh, I'm sorry. The question was, in doing my research, what did I find? What did I find to be the most startling and surprising? And the thing I think that knocked me over was I got entranced by the on-camera Oprah, and I was surprised to find out all of the culture of secrecy that she has to live in, that she does live in, the secrets that are kept from her, the secrets that she demands of her employees, the secrets that traumatized her as a little girl and an adolescent. That surprised me because she seems so open. She seems like she tells us everything, but there's an undercurrent throughout her life about secrets, and it came around to the point where I've just gotten through telling you how I believe in telling the truth and doing the unauthorized version, but I found myself getting drawn into the secrets when I was in Kosciuszko, and her Aunt Catherine mentioned something about Vernon Winfrey. I had not yet interviewed Mr. Winfrey, and she said, "Well, of course, Vernon isn't Oprah's biological father." I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, well, "Oprah has always wanted to know the identity of her father. She's cried on my shoulder. She's begged me to tell her." And then she started telling me who the father was. And she said, I said, "Why don't you tell Oprah?" And she said, "Because it's Oprah's mother's place to tell her." And she said, "And you have to give me your word of honor that you will not write this. It's not your place to do it. It's her mother." Now, for those of you who plan to read the book, you're going to see the picture of Aunt Catherine. She's strong and tough, and I felt I was talking to a biblical figure, and there's no way that I would ever disobey her. So while I know the identity, it does tell you the secrets that Oprah has had to deal with, and this is one that she's still trying to get out of her mother.
Another question? You must have so many questions. Yes, all the way back in the red there in the Phillies hat.
I just wanted to know if you actually spoke to her mother, or was it just the other relatives, or did you meet and speak to her mother at all?
Question, did I meet and speak to the mother at all? No, I did not. The mother lives in Milwaukee, and it's a very strange thing when you call her mother, which I did, and I didn't look up the number. Mr. Winfrey gave me the number, and Aunt Catherine gave me the number, but the telephone company comes on the line and says, unless you have a personal code that you put in, this call cannot be connected. So I asked Mr. Winfrey about it, and he said, well, Oprah has her mother on a very short leash. The relationship between Oprah and her mother is not really good, even to this day. But I must tell you that Oprah is exceedingly generous to her family, exceedingly generous. She's taken care of her mother, bought her a condominium, provided a nurse, provided kind of a minder, provided a car and driver. She's been equally generous to her father as well, although she hasn't retired him. When I was in Nashville, I went after our telephone interview. Mr. Winfrey asked me if I would come to his barbershop. So I went to his barbershop, where he still works at the age of 75. Which I thought was quite amazing, but I think it tells you something about Oprah, too. She will never, ever stop working.
In the yellow here.
This is not going to be an easy question to answer. There's probably not a short answer, but you talked about, you know, the secret that her cousin revealed to you. How on earth do you get people to be this revealing to you? I would think particularly a figure like Oprah is probably paying a lot of bills. I mean, people are probably very grateful. How do you get people to talk to you in 30 seconds or less?
Is there what?
In 30 seconds or less.
One, how do I get people to talk to me? I don't get everybody to talk to me. There are many people who did not. Some who signed. Oprah puts everybody, her employees, her veterinarians, her landscape architects, her designers, her doctors, under strict confidentiality agreements. And so many, many people, as much as Oprah is loved, she's also feared. So a lot of those people were frightened. As one said to me, you know, there's no upside. This is a former employee. There's no upside talking to you. There is only a downside. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, Oprah is worth $2.7 billion, and she's got at least $1 million in lawyers. I said, you have a point. But I still want to ask you, and then I will proceed with a very specific question that is a result of research. For instance, if I called you, let's say that you went to school with Oprah, I would call you and say, how do you do, beautiful woman in the yellow shirt right there. My name is Kitty Kelly. I'm a writer from Washington, D.C., and I'm working on a biography of Oprah Winfrey. And usually the person will understand why they're being called. Oh, right, I went to TSU with Oprah. And the conversation might go from there, or else I would ask a specific question. But an awful lot of this is sheer persistence. I mean, 850 people, that was done over a period of 4 years. So you ask, and you ask, and you ask. As my husband says, I go through life with the begging bowl.
We have time for a few more questions. Back here on our left.
Hi. I'm just getting here. Maybe the question has already been asked. My daughter and I, we had a debate. She said, Mom, why are you going to this book signing? And then she told me that she read something in the newspaper that you referred to Oprah as being a rich Negro. And she said she just read it in the newspaper. Number one, I asked, is that true? And then number two, that's such an old term to use.
It is, yeah. And I never used it, ever.
Okay, great.
The person who used it is Oprah. And Oprah said, when asked, what was the most precious gift she ever received? And I was surprised by her answer because I thought she might say her wonderful friends or her health, but she said, "It is the Bentley I received from Tyler Perry. I call him my rich Negro man." So I didn't say that, but Oprah said that. And I agree with you. It is an old time. You're right. Everybody should be beyond that. But Oprah is still in a bit of an old time mindset on that particular subject. So no, I did not say that.
All the way in back there.
Rise above their childhood experiences, and their adult career is influenced by their college, by their early colleagues who helped to shape them, by the liberal arts or science that they study. But this is a segment of Oprah's life about which we common folks hear very little. So in your interviewing, what did you discover about her years from, say, 18 to 30 that you may be judged to be responsible for her successes in making money and a name for herself?
Did you all hear that question? I discovered two things. In researching Oprah's youth from the age of 1 to 6, despite the fact that she was born into poor circumstances, she had a wonderful, wonderful experience. And that is that she was raised really with the full and undivided attention of an extended family. She was the only child, and so great attention was heaped on her. Consequently, we had a very, very precocious little girl, born smart. And then I interviewed people in her junior high class and her high school. I interviewed her drama teacher, who was absolutely knocked out by Oprah Gale. She said that Oprah entered her classroom at the age of 16 and said, "Hi, I'm Oprah Gale, and I want to be a movie star." And Mrs. Haynes said, "Well, that's a very admirable pursuit." And Oprah said, "No, you misunderstand. I'm going to be a movie star." And Andrea told me that she then realized that she had a very, very talented young girl on her hands, and so she spent a great deal of time picking out the readings so that Oprah could give special dramatic performances, which she did in high school, and she won a lot of awards. And it was through that, she really didn't want to go to college. She had no desire to go to college. She wanted to go right into television, and from television, she wanted to become a movie star. But her father, who you'll see from the book, was very, very strict. Oh, he was tough. Insisted that she go to college, and he sent her to Tennessee State University, and she majored in communications. This is a long way of answering your question, but there really is a wonderful part in the book where you begin to understand how Oprah became Oprah.
And I'm afraid that's all we have time for. We're on a tight schedule today. Please join me in thanking Kitty Kelly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to a podcast from the Free Library's Author Event Series. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information is available at freelibrary.org. Thank you for listening to a podcast from the Free Library's Author Event Series. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information is available at freelibrary.org.